Welcome to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on CFRO 100.5 Cooperative Radio, cooperadio.org on the web. I'm your host tonight, Dale McGladrey. Tonight we travel to Nelson in British Columbia's Kootenai region. Nelson is located in a valley in the Selkirk Mountains. They're just right next door to the Rocky Mountains, if you're not familiar with the geography, and it's a few hours' drive north of the U.S.-Canada border. Now, it's in British Columbia, of course, it's north. Nelson got its start thanks to silver mining in the late 1800s. It's had to reinvent itself a number of times since then, and it's done a wonderful job. I visited there earlier this month and had a great time. But that's not the reason I'm talking about Nelson tonight. It has a very vibrant co-op scene, including a sister co-op radio station, CJLY, Kootenai Co-op Radio, Kootenai Car Share, and the Kootenai Country Food Co-op. The food co-op is building a new store that will actually include 54 residences and retail space. Not bad for a population of 10,000 people. Tonight, we're speaking with the Upper Columbia Co-op Council and the COOP, which is the Kootenai Co-op, or the Kootenai Boundary Community Services Cooperative. And I had trouble with those names in the interviews, too. The Upper Columbia Co-op Council is the local association of co-ops in the Kootenais. I spoke with Zoe Creighton, the council coordinator. Zoe, I am so sorry I mispronounced your name in the interview. And we had a great talk about co-ops in the Kootenai. So here's Zoe. I'm speaking with Zoe Creighton, coordinator and founder of the Upper Columbia Cooperative Council. Thanks for speaking with me today, Zoe.
It's good to be here, Dale.
So tell us, what is the Upper Columbia Cooperative Council?
Well done. Nice pausing between each word to get full pronunciation. You can call it the U3C, UCCC. There are lots of ways to make it easier to...
That works for me.
More listener-friendly. we're an association of, now I believe our membership is up to 19 credit unions and cooperatives of the loosely defined Upper Columbia region of southeastern BC. So based in Nelson, and we were formed back in 2008 with the primary mandate was to encourage communication and collaboration among credit unions and co-ops in the region, and also to educate the public about how vibrant our co-op and credit union sector is here.
There's just something kind of meta about a co-op of co-ops.
We're second tier. Yeah. All of our members, yeah, have their own members. So in that lies a unique approach that we need to do when we're delivering our services and communicating.
So what does the structure look like for that?
Same as any cooperative. So it's a board of directors, and I'm the one part-time coordinator hired by the board of directors. And each one of our members appoints a delegate that participates in kind of the governance and can also appoint a delegate to run for the board. So we have, right now, we have between a 5 and 9 person board. So about half of our members have representation on the board.
Can you tell us a little bit about the area that you cover? I'd never actually heard the expression Upper Columbia, but I know what the Kootenais are.
Yeah, it took the founding board several very long meetings, as you can imagine, to decide how we wanted to name the co-op. And Upper Columbia is actually, it refers to the river, the Columbia River. We wanted to distinguish ourselves from the Columbia Basin, which is used quite often around here, partly because there's a big trust called the Columbia Basin Trust, which does a lot of great work in the area, but it excludes a key area of a high cluster of co-ops in our region, which is on the other side of the Blueberry Polson Pass, Grand Forks and the Kettle Valley around there. So loosely, they might, you know, if you were a raindrop and you were in the Columbia River, you might somehow end up in the Kettle Valley. It's actually a term that's used a lot south of the border in Spokane, talks about Upper Columbia a lot. But so our region where our members are from are west towards kind of Grand Forks, Christina Lake, north up to Revelstoke, although if we had members, I don't think there is a co-op as far up as Valemont, but we definitely welcome them into the fold. The East Kootenai is represented with the East Kootenai Community Credit Union. So Cranbrook, Golden, around that corridor, the Columbia Valley, and then around Nelson. So Salmo, Creston, Slocan Valley, Fruitvale, Castlegar Trail, that whole kind of the kind of central southern part of that valley north of the U.S. border.
Right. I was just thinking, like, you have the Alberta border on one side and the yep. U.S. border on the bottom.
Yep. And then the Okanagan is outside of...
Then the raindrop cloud on the west side.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you tell me about your relationship with the BC Co-op Association? I know that you guys are members. So, mm-hmm. I mean, how does that work? Now we're talking about some really interesting... Because, of course, the co-ops here can be direct members of the BCAA as well.
They can. The BCCA had, before we started, before the U3C started, I think the BC Co-op Association had two or three members locally. And they were instrumental. BCCA was instrumental in helping the support of this regional council. And at the beginning, actually, it was the then director of co-op development who came to a conference that one of our local co-ops was putting on, the Kootenai Country Store Co-op. They had a consultant come in, an HR consultant, whose area of expertise was cooperatives. And they, in kind of a grand gesture of cooperation among co-ops, they decided to sponsor a one-day co-op training course for all of our local co-ops and credit unions. And one of the sessions in that... was forming a regional co-op association. And the then director of co-op development from the BCCA chaired that session and offered kind of the provincial perspective and was able to actually follow up with some financial support for the establishment of this council. So we started kind of as a chapter-like, regional chapter of the BC Co-op Association. And then figured that it was best for us to incorporate independently, but we still have kind of a sister affiliation. So all of our members who we woo into the fold through the U3C are automatically members of BCCA as well. And whenever BCCA receives a request for membership from this region, they refer it to us. And so the line of communication is also quite clear because I personally sit on the board of the BC Co-op Association as well, representing the Upper Columbia Co-op Council. So there's direct communication, and our shares and dues structure are the same, and we're really clear to kind of articulate the benefits of the BC Co-op Association and put them through that like regional filter so that they're relevant to our members here.
I find that more than a little amazing. The backgrounds I've come from my various jobs and involvements, I'm just really surprised the turf war didn't break out
between
the BCCA and you folks wanting to go your own way.
Well, I wouldn't say we went our own way. I'd say we're independently incorporated, but we have a pretty extensive letter of understanding between the two associations, and it took a while for both of the boards to back and forth. And we do a dues split, so BCCA takes 35% of the dues of our members. We keep 65%. BCCA does all of the accounting and bookkeeping on our behalf. So it's really there wasn't really an opportunity for a turf war because we were both looking at the same goal, which was to expand co-op development in the province.
That's excellent. I have been involved with the House of Labor and have seen some of the sniping that goes on between, like, yeah, we're going to grab those people.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, communication has to be open and constant in order for us to both realize that it makes no sense to snipe. However, yeah, we're all in it for the same thing. And we're just trying to look at sharing the workload and doing the good work together as opposed to competing.
That's awesome. Yeah, poach would have probably been the more appropriate word. But yeah, the cooperative name living through the actions of the organization. That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Are there unique challenges to working in the Kootenays?
It's a smaller population base, for sure, which I think has both benefits and challenges. The people who are kind of dyed-in-the-wool cooperators here participate in all of our events, are very involved in the governance of each of the co-ops. You know, it's a small, strong kind of subsector of all of our members who work together to build each of our co-ops. And so you'll quite often see the same faces on boards of different co-ops and credit unions and as the active members. So that's kind of the two sides of that. The ability to, you know, hold events and promote them so that a high enough number of people come to make them viable and sustainable is a challenge because of a smaller population pool to draw from. And you have to be very careful, especially with BCCA. We've been working with a couple of provincial initiatives that wouldn't fly here because there are different economic development challenges in our communities. The perspectives of what is important for our co-ops are really strongly grounded in their location and the rural context. Our credit union sector is, I'm not sure where it fits on the national scale, but we have a very strong independent credit union sector here. So in the Lower Mainland, where there are fewer bigger credit unions, we still have small community credit unions. The town of Creston has its own credit union. Nelson and District has just 3 branches. So the realities are very different. So it's a challenge being that filter to make provincial and national initiatives relevant and successful in this region. But I also think the benefits outweigh the challenges because, as I said, the people who understand the benefits of cooperation and who have seen it transform towns and smaller communities in this region are the biggest ambassadors of the sector.
At Each Roll, we recently spoke with Carol Murray from the BC Co-op Association, and she said there was a bit of a shift of focus happening in the BCAA. Members were directing them from kind of their classic advocacy role to more of a community building role. Are you seeing the same thing here? And as part of the BCCA, actually, you would be also seeing that at that level.
Yeah, I was going to respond from that BCCA perspective. And definitely, I've been on the board at BCCA for, this is my 8th year. So for 7 years. So I've witnessed that shift for sure. I mean, BCCA, when I jumped on board, was really strong in research and reporting on the co-op sector and a lot of advocacy work. And it was an amazing organization that focused on that. And yeah, through board and member feedback and work and kind of the environmental scan about, okay, what's happening now in the world? What do we have to adapt to be relevant? How do we best serve the interests of our members? Yeah, the BCCA has shifted. And this co-op council here, once again, it's having that filter that similar shifts have happened kind of culturally in this part of the province, but they have their own specific regional nuance. And the U3C also doesn't have the capacity, i.e. I'm a coordinator that works 6 hours a week, to be able to respond quite as comprehensively to the cultural shifts that happen. So we rely a lot on what BCCA does to as an input into our strategic planning every year. So how will this work in the local context? So we're not, and also we have fewer members, right? BCCA has 60, we have 19. So we're able to kind of talk one-on-one with our members, and I'm not sure I could say with confidence that there's been that much of a shift in the same time frame.
Would it be fair to paraphrase that as saying you already had the community and you didn't have a lot of resources to do the advocacy? So,
well, yeah, we were born out of our community, right? So we didn't, and BCCA has done a lot of the advocacy work anyway. And I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done for sure. but we're still young, so we're still figuring out what our role is primarily. And part of that's reflecting the work and furthering the work of BCCA. But part of that's also just finding our own footing and what our members need and what we want to do as an association and what our goals are. I mean, we have them all on paper, but how they're going to play out over the next 10 years.
Right.
Only the shadows know.
I have that question coming up too. Nelson seems to be a real hotbed of co-op activity. You guys seem to be punching above your weight. I'm wondering, do you have any insight as to why, or theories, or is there a understood story?
There's a long history of cooperation and collaboration in this area, and I think it comes both out of kind of cultural ideologies and economic necessity. So the history of the area, I mean, apart from the First Nations, I won't go into that kind of history, but war resistors coming up from the States in the 60s, starting homesteads, learning to be self-sufficient. Being self-sufficient quite often involves collaborating with your neighbors, starting land cooperatives, buying clubs for food, housing co-ops, coupled with the immigration of Dukobors, who are pacifists. They're collaborative. They live in strong collaborative communities. All of that is kind of the backdrop where the early co-ops started in this area. So there were, as I said, the land co-ops and food co-ops. Transportation co-ops were kind of a backbone because there was one kind of primary industry back in the 30s, 40s, I think, was the Cominco in Trail. And so I think it was called the Trail Transportation Co-op started out of necessity, right? People didn't have cars to get to work, so they, you know, bought a bus together. And so I think the combination between the co-op principles being kind of innate in people who have lived here for the past 50 years, coupled with the economic need to collaborate to fulfill your needs, has made it a pretty fertile ground for officially incorporated co-ops to develop. And the credit union sector plays large in that. And I think a lot of it has to do with the physical geography of the area. You know, there are lots of mountain passes that are unpassable over the winter. And, you know, kitchen table conversations started out where people needed to borrow money for their X, Y, Z, and they wanted to do it in their backyard so they didn't have to drive across the pass in the winter to get the money. And as a result, you have these independent credit unions. And so I think between people understanding that financial cooperation was essential to have their needs met, plus all other kinds of cooperation, did the same thing, I think it is kind of the backdrop for why this area is has such a rich co-op, a diverse and rich co-op sector now. And I think also the kind of spike that's happening now with cooperatives has become quite evident in Nelson, right? There are lots of nonprofit co-ops popping up. all over the place. And our food co-op is one of the most successful retail businesses in town. And I think that's because people want to support it because it's a cooperative, and because its roots are in the community and people want the money to stay in the community, as well as it just being a well-run business.
Well, and your food co-op, I was in there last night. I have been in a lot of small towns up the Fraser River. I'm originally from, grew up in Quesnel. And I don't recall seeing anything like that in Quesnel at a comparable size.
Yeah. Well, it's about to celebrate its 40th birthday. So it has a long history of, you know, figuring out what members want. And it also is a big supporter of the local agriculture sector by working out arrangements with local suppliers to get their goods out there and sell them. And there's another, the agricultural co-op sector in this area is pretty strong. There's a new, the Kootenay and Boundary Food Producers Co-op, which is an association of farmers who are starting to cooperate around distribution services. In the Kettle Valley, there's another kind of, it's an agricultural co-op, but it also has a retail element, where they're allowing their farmer members an online portal through which to have their foods sold and delivered. So it's there's lots going on, and each of the co-ops, part of what the co-op council really puts a lot of time into is educating our co-op members about the benefits and the power of cooperation among cooperatives. So really encouraging the emerging co-ops to ask for organizational or whatever kind of help from the more established co-ops.
I'm also hearing a lot of, and I hope this term isn't a pejorative, in some circles it's becoming that, but I'm hearing a lot of like entrepreneurial get up and go kind of spirit as well.
Oh, that's not, I don't think that's pejorative at all. I think that's the fabulous association that's happening with cooperatives now, that I think co-ops for a long time had a reputation of only being nonprofit, of only being kind of back to the landers and Birkenstocks, although Birkenstocks are back in style now, but that didn't have any of that kind of entrepreneurial zest. But now, with the whole social economy exploding and co-ops being touted left, right, and center as the original social enterprise, people are starting to connect the dots between cooperatives and entrepreneurship and the ability for people to, you know, walk their talk, have values, and that making money isn't a bad thing. It's what you do with the money that can or cannot make it a bad thing, right? And so, no, U3C is now partnering with one of our local employment development services, Kootenay Career Development Service, to bring the Groundswell Economic Alternatives Program that was successful in Vancouver. Are you aware of it? It's
Yeah.
So it's, once again, it's kind of squeezed through that filter that makes it relevant here. Mm-hmm. But to explore entrepreneurial opportunities for young people that are kind of not business as usual. And co-ops, worker co-ops, most specifically, are front and center with that initiative. So a lot of our work right now is around educating people around how you can be both entrepreneurial and values-based and cooperative at the same time.
What do you see as your greatest challenge?
At the Upper Columbia Co-op Council?
Yeah.
Capacity right now, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Yeah. As I said, you know, you need to have a points person, administrator, kind of the buck stops here person to make things go forward in a timely manner. And right now we only have enough funding for, as I said, a 5 or 6 hour a week coordinator position. So I make the most of those 5 or 6 hours, to be sure. But we need to really focus on revenue generation to build our capacity. We don't have any bricks and mortar place. You know, I work out of the kitchen at home, and we have a very strong board of directors, which is a huge asset, and they're a working board and very dedicated. And they also are very involved in their own cooperatives and what they do there. So, yeah, I think... capacity, which comes out of a lack of funds. It doesn't mean that we can't engage in a lot of project development, which is actually the core of our work now, is doing business development projects for emerging co-ops and, you know, partnerships with educational initiatives. But yeah, in terms of day-to-day operations, I'd say that's our biggest challenge.
Can you tell me about some of your successes?
The council has been most successful, I think, in, two things. Raising, like opening people's eyes, making people's eyes pop open about how big an impact cooperatives have in this area. And how some of the places that they didn't know or the services that they didn't know were delivered are delivered by cooperatives. And that, that co-ops can be entrepreneurial, that co-ops can make money. So that's one thing kind of in terms of public awareness. And the other thing is really pushing that Principle 6, really letting the members of co-ops and the management of co-ops and the board of co-ops lean, letting them know that they're supposed to lean on one another to ensure everyone's successful. And I think it's slow work, but I think in our 8 years of operation, our members are starting to really understand the power of banding together as co-ops and credit unions. And as we educate the public about the importance of being loyal to local co-ops and their community economic development effects, I think everyone's starting to kind of get it, and we're connecting the dots for people.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it.
It's been fun, Dale. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd once again like to really thank Zoe for the interview and for all the co-op introductions she made for me when I was in Nelson. I could not have got as many interviews there without her. So thank you very much, Zoe. My next interview is with a very unique co-op. They're doing really cool stuff in the community services space.
Prudence Elise Breton, who is executive coordinator for the Kootenai Boundary Community Services Co-op. And that's quite a mouthful. Thank you for speaking with me, Prudence.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a bit about your co-op? It looks really unique.
It is really unique. So Kootenai Boundary Community Services Co-op is also called the COOP. So it's the mix of Kootenais and co-op. So the COOP it's an idea that came into play in like 2001. So several community service organizations of the Kootenai and Boundary region came together, and they were all brought together because they were fearful. They were afraid that the government would go take their contracts and go into an open bid
mm-hmm.
Process. And so they thought, so we better doing something so we can create some kind of entity that will bid on the contracts, and then we can keep our independence and all of that. So they thought about the co-op model and decided that the co-op would actually do that, so serve that purpose. And then later on, the government decided to pull off this idea of going into open procurement. But then they decided to maintain the co-op, because they realized that this co-op, this new way of working together, was actually helping them.
So this is essentially a co-op of community service organizations.
Social service organizations.
Social services.
Yeah.
So yeah. Nonprofit societies and yes. Is it primarily nonprofit societies?
They are all nonprofit societies, yeah.
So, I found that kind of mind-blowing. I did read that correctly, but it's a co-op of nonprofit societies, sounds intriguing and weird.
Yeah, we are 13 of us at this point. So we have a lot of kind of hubs for their community. because in this region, it's quite large region, but it's a rural region. So a lot of them are kind of isolated. Like Nakusp is like 2 hours and a half from Nelson, and then Kaslo, it's probably almost 2 hour drive, and Salmo is another 40 minutes out of the way. And so we're all like dispersed. And so for them to deliver social services alone in their municipality, their little location, they feel isolated. But the co-op is bringing all of these people that are doing essentially the same thing. It's bringing them together multiple times a year to talk about how they deliver their services, how they went through some problems and how they resolve them. And sometimes somebody's coming up in their meeting and say, oh, I have this staff. I don't know what to do with her. She's been, you know, going on sick days forever, and I don't know. And then someone else will say, well, I have the same problem, and let me tell you how to go through this. So there's a lot of support. That's incredible how these people that are all in the same boat, all in their municipalities or locations, how they can help each other just by sitting together. That's as simple as that. There's a lot of information sharing also. Have you heard about this program? And I've talked to the ministry of this and that. And actually, if you present them a plan, they might give you more money. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, so it's huge.
Is it primarily then just networking, or do they also pool resources to bring in services?
We're based on the principle that, like, everybody's independent and they do their own things. So we don't interfere. We don't do any micromanagement. Sometimes we'll do some partnership. Like, for example, the co-op itself is sharing its bookkeeper with another social service organization that's a member. We're also offering a benefit package through the Federation of Community Social Services of BC. We offer that to our members. And we also, like, for example, we are registered with BC Bid. They're sending us all the bids every day, a list of bids, and we share it with our members rather than every member having to subscribe to this service.
Right.
Well, those are little examples. But what we do together sometimes will be to work on regional issues. So, for example, maybe 2-3 years ago, by talking, they realized, oh, we don't really have a real coordinated response for children and youth that are experiencing neglect or abuse or sexual assault. So they saw that the problem was regional, was not only in specific places. So they decided, okay, let's work together on that one. And then the co-op applied for some funding for different phases of this project. And now we're at the third phase, and we're developing a rural delivery model for a child advocacy center. So in big cities like Vancouver, for example, they built that center that they can bring the children and youth there, and they have the whole gamut of a service, the whole, I don't know, gamut is the right, the whole, the varieties of experts that are helping them in their more interdisciplinary process. But here it's a rural delivery model, so there's no building, because we have, like, we're too far apart, and during the winter it's hard to travel. So they have like little interdisciplinary team in each sub-region of our region, and they, every time there's a case, they will reunite and work on that case. So the co-op was very instrumental in that, because we applied, we got the funding, we got everybody together. We hired a regional consultant. So that's one example.
Can you name some of the members? We haven't actually talked about who your members are.
Right. I'll start with the newest one is Quains. It's the Circle of Indigenous Nation Society. They are based in Casagar, and they are representing Indigenous people and helping, supporting Indigenous people. So they have several contracts with the government to do that. We have Nelson Care Society. Nelson Care Society is a big, big social service organization. And it's based in Nelson, but it has a lot of regional programs. Like, it's helping the homeless people. For example, they have an emergency shelter, and this is, it has a regional reach. We have also one that's a little different from the others. It's the Kootenay Art Therapy Institute. So it's a school, where a very well-known school for art therapy. And so for them, the advantage of being part of the co-op is that they are connected with the sector and the needs of the organizations in terms of therapy. And we have also in the cusp, it's Arrow Lake Community Services, and they are really a hub there. It's a very, well, far, if you compare with Nelson, they're all there, and they have all sort of services there for children, for families. They have a food cupboard. They have also BC Work. They manage the transit system, so it's like huge organization for that small place. We have also Nelson, we have Kootenay Kids Society, more around kids. Same in Casagar, Kootenay Family Place, more around kids and family. So those are examples.
Nice. How does the Coop manage itself?
Manage itself?
You have a board of directors?
Yes, we have a board of directors of 8 at this point. And on the board, so the chair is a member at large. So she's not member of she's not on the board of any of our members, and all of the other ones are representing the board of one of our members. Yeah, so we don't have someone to represent all of our members, but 7 out of 13 is not bad. And they're really dedicated people. And we have me as an executive coordinator. We have 2 program coordinator right now. We have one that's taking care of the REACH program. Unfortunately, this program is winding down. It will be ended on June 30th. But we were doing training and consultation for social service organizations in the basin, which is the region is even bigger than the one on which we have our members. And we have the early years coordinator, Sonia Tavares. And she's in charge of all the programs that are early years based, mostly regional based. For example, There's Nobody is Perfect. It's a series of workshop for parents to help them in their parenting skills. And it's delivered all around the region to our members or others. So every year we distribute the money we receive from IHA for the organizations in the region to deliver these series according to their needs. If 1 year they need one, they can have one. Another year they need 2, they can have 2. So that's another great example of rural delivery. And we have 2 support staff, Colleen, admin assistant, and we have the bookkeeper, Cheryl, that we share with one of our members.
What does your service delivery to your members look like? Is it primarily a place to make a common application and then distributing that to members? You mentioned the list, the bid list that you do. Mm-hmm. So like, do you like send an information packet out every month? Do you?
Well, it's more about information service and sharing information and also coming together to talk about common issues.
So your board would like say, we're going to have quarterly meetings.
We have members. Quarterly meetings. Yeah. They are called council meetings. So everybody, we have one representative from each organization, EDs, and often a representative from their board as well that are coming. And then during that meeting, we talk about, okay, we all have IT issues. We need a private cloud, and then we talk about it, and then we try to find solutions that we could work together. And the co-op is a place where you find various options, but not everybody needs it. No, we don't have one service that 13 of our members will use. Like, we are a place where people, if they want, can come and partner on projects. And we share information. So twice a month, I send them a bulletin that I call. So from, it could be sometimes an interesting article or a job offer from one of our members. I'm sending it to everybody, or an open house. So that's a way that I'm sharing information with everybody.
It must be a challenge when you have such a diverse, you have a small membership that's quite spread out. Is that challenging, or does that?
It depends on what level. Trying to bring everybody together, it's not always easy because, well, in the winter with the mountain passes, it's sometimes a challenge to be able to travel. So the technology piece would come really handy there, but it's pricey. We don't have it. And also, we need a reliable internet connection to be able to do that. So there's a lot of factors in there. So that would help. But on the level of, how could I say that? Like, coming together to agree on things and to flesh out our ideas, that is amazing how much we are easily working together. And I don't want to go to in details with that, but there was an opportunity offered by, it's called the Sustainability Roundtable. And now I'm bragging about my co-op, but so the Sustainability Roundtable was offering everywhere in the province was offering them to pilot a certain model on how to deliver services with the government in a different way. And so in our region, the Kootenay region, three pilots were requested, including the West Kootenay boundary, us, and in two other places in this region. And for us, it was easy. We were like, oh, yeah. And then we sat together and we could start working right away. Whereas elsewhere, and I've heard about them, they're kind of like they're calling individually and they're saying, we do that. Well, first you have to come together. And for us, it's natural. We're friends. We're used to talk about sometimes difficult things together. And it's so intangible what we do with the co-op. That's what's amazing. Like, we embody the intangible collaboration and support.
What are your biggest challenges?
Well, one, you'll be surprised, is funding. Because there's not a lot of opportunity for a co-op to get some core funding from the government. It's even hard for nonprofits. So for co-op, it's even harder. And we don't fit any program requirement. Like, what we're doing is intangible, even for the government, for the funders, I guess. So and now that we're losing a contract, it's becoming a bigger challenge. So we sometimes have to live off of, well, contracts for a project and another one. So that's for sure complicated. Another challenge, it's kind of a question we're always asking ourselves, like, should we keep the membership the way it is? Because we have developed over the years this very cozy relationship. We like it like that. It's working well. And sometimes we're asking, well, should we expand to a little bit our region? Oh, it would be hard to communicate because of the technology piece is not quite, it's not there yet. And because, there's a difference in culture. Maybe that wouldn't work. Maybe people in the East Kootenays don't want to like work with us on things because they do things differently, and it's okay. Like, so that's, I don't know if it's a challenge, but it's always a burning question. Yeah. How should we do that?
And so you talked about one of your successes. Can you tell me a few more?
Wow, we had a lot of successes. Now, I feel like talking about REACH, even though it's going to be terminated in the end of June, I think it's a big success. Like for 5 years, we helped so many hundreds and hundreds of organizations that needed a specific training or consultation for, like, they needed a consultant to develop their strategic planning. They didn't have quite the money. We were able to help them for a lower price, and we were very responsive to a specific need. Like, organization would say, oh, accreditation is coming and we have to have training in this and this and that. Okay, we'll do that within 2 months, done. So I think this was a big success to support them. And now that we, unfortunately, our contract is terminated by the funder, we get a lot of feedback, people saying, oh no, what are we going to do? We still want to get that support from you. And I think we got a lot of, I don't want to say publicity, but we raised our profile. The co-op was better known thanks to that program. Yeah.
What are your future goals?
I'm glad you're asking, because I don't know yet, but we're working on it, because with the end of this contract, and also with this opportunity that we got from the Sustainability Roundtable. Sustainability Roundtable is a lot of deputy minister and CEO from big organizations in the BC, like CEA, Minister of Children and Family Development. They're all together to propose new ways for social service organizations to deal with the government, in a nutshell. It's a little more complicated than that. But so we have the opportunity of working together and give a new role for the co-op. Like, are we going to become this, go back to our roots and become this entity that will be used to deliver contract on a regional basis? Then we have more money available to deliver more services or to change the way we deliver them. Maybe we want to do more prevention in this region. So the co-op will certainly play a role. It's not clear yet how it will play that role, but I think the members are really wanting to maintain the co-op in that direction. And I think they also see the co-op as augmenting their work, like making sure that we deliver a quality service.
Final question, because I know you need to get out of here. Do you have any advice for other groups of thinking of using this kind of model?
No, I would just say that's a very good idea. Think about it. But we all develop models. I really like co-ops. I think it's a very, very great model. But you all develop your solutions that will work for your situation. And in the Kootenays, co-ops are really popular. So it was kind of a natural way to come together to choose a cooperative.
Thank you very much, Prudence.
You're welcome.
For sacrificing a little bit of your Friday, get the heck out of
and it's sunny.
Work done on a sunny day time. I very much appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that was the Coop in the Kootenays. They're, like most social organizations, struggling with funding. So we certainly wish them the best for that. They're definitely doing good work. And we have more interviews from Nelson, but that's all the time we have for tonight. You can find Each for All on eachforall.coop. Email us at ideas@eachforall.coop. Our Twitter handle is @eachforall. And if you have any questions or show ideas, we'd love to hear from you. You've been listening to Each for All on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO-FM 100.5, and cooperadio.org. Have a great evening, and we'll see you next week.